Good morning, it's 7:34, and you're listening to Upfront. I'm Janine Etter. With the growing awareness of trolling in cyberspace, and the daily litany of insults being hurled at opponents or critics of the Trump administration, we turn our attention to the subject of verbal abuse, what it is, and its impacts on the human psyche, speaking with Patricia Evans, author of The Verbally Abusive Relationship and Controlling People. So, Patricia Evans, thank you so much for speaking with me today.
Thank you. Real pleasure to be here to talk with you about all this stuff.
So, what is the definition of verbal abuse?
Verbal abuse, I would say, are the words and phrases that define another person or other people or you, and it's basically a lie told to you or to others about you. Verbal abuse is not, no one can tell you what you think. Like, you think you're so smart, you know. You might hear that in a classroom. Or someone might say, oh, you just want to argue, without ever asking you what you want. So it's a lie told to you about you.
And what is the impact of verbal abuse?
Yeah, well, actually, the impact is really much more than one would really realize. If they hear this kind of thing, they begin to feel confused. They begin to sometimes doubt themselves. Some people will think, maybe I am too sensitive. Maybe I sound critical. Something they're accused of. It's like a brainwashing if you hear it a long time. If it's in a relationship and you're always being frequently told, you know, you just want to argue, you're trying to start a fight. You know, you blow everything out of proportion. You don't even know what you're talking about. That never happened, that kind of talk. You know, it can get to be real confusing if you're basing this relationship on the idea that this person is conscious and cares about you and loves you or cares about you and is actually conscious and actually speaking what they believe to be the truth. And it's difficult. It precedes all domestic violence. You just don't have someone come up and hit you if they've never defined you in any way, you know, told you, you know, you're too sensitive or you're stupid or you're just too fat or you don't know how to cook. That's no telling what you might hear in an abusive relationship.
Would you say the verbal abuser is mentally ill, suffering from mental illness?
Well, you know, I can't say for sure you can call it a mental illness because it's like a mental illness. If you wanted to call a disorder, say a real, real severe narcissistic disorder, a mental illness, then one might say so. But often it's just it's like being semi-conscious. It's like not having a developed emotional intelligence. It's like not being able to look within because maybe he was raised in a very difficult childhood where he never knew when somebody would be yelling at him. So he's sure not going to be still and look within and get in touch with himself and his intuition. So a couple of his functions can be disabled. And if he wasn't nurtured, then he doesn't have the quality of nurturance and receptivity, because how can you be receptive when you never know you're going to be in trouble for no reason at all from, say, an alcoholic father? Okay, just to make a scenario. So couldn't you say he's mentally ill or he's just lacking awareness or he's semi-conscious? Whatever you want to call it, in that case, he can be abusive because all of a sudden his partner doesn't want what he wants or think what he thinks because there's no room in her psyche for his projection. She shows up as a totally separate, unique person. So her individuality triggers him. Verbal abuse, and here's something I wrote about 10 years ago. I never published it. Anyway, here's a little paragraph to show you what it's like. Like a viral invasion, covert verbal abuse insidiously infiltrates the minds of millions. And like a heat-seeking missile, overt verbal abuse unerringly assaults its target. It can hide out in relationships, families, schools, cultures, and cyberspace. It can bring tyrants to power and destroy relationships. That's it. And I think that understanding what verbal abuse is, that we can't define another human being. We don't know what they are, think, feel, need, want, and so forth, unless we ask them. And if we don't ask them, we can't say, oh, they want all our good jobs or whatever. They want to do this and that. And so it's just amazing that there are people in the world who do try to control other people. It's a very controlling behavior.
And it's good that you mentioned control, because you have another book called Controlling People, which basically is saying that verbal abuse, in its intention, consciously or unconsciously, is to control another person.
Exactly. It definitely is. Yeah. You know, just somebody here, you just want to argue, you're too sensitive, you're trying to start a fight, you blow it out of proportion. It's all to silence this other person, to take away her ability to even talk, or his ability to talk. It's to silence. That's control. You know, that's, here we are, our whole country revolves around our values of freedom of speech, and yet a controller will not think of himself as controlling, but he will try to take away a person's freedom of speech and control their right to speak, to explain things, to talk, to have opinions, to suggest things, to ask questions. All of those things can be assaulted by a controller. So verbal abuse is controlling, definitely.
And the person is pretty much trying to do this to get a sense of security, where they feel they've been dislodged.
Yeah, ejected and dislodged. I'll tell you a really extreme type of situation, because it involves physical violence. But a man called me up out of the blue, and he said, "Hi, are you the author in Controlling People?" And I said, "Yep." And he said, "Oh, this helped me so much. Now I know why I threw my wife to the ground." I went, "Whoa, wow, okay. Can you tell me what happened?" He said, "Well, I got home from work early, and I love to cook. I was cooking up a storm, had all the burners going. Then my wife walked in. She said hi, and I said hi, and then she looked down at the mail, and I went in a rage and threw to the floor. Now I know why. A whole huge part of him was obviously projected into her, and he knew she was just going to walk over and say, 'Can I help you with the cooking?' They'd have this nice cook time together. Instead, she's standing there looking down at the mail, and it's like half of him was gone. He felt so split in half, almost killed. So he threw to the ground. Then, of course, he got kicked out, and then he looked for what was wrong with him. But the whole thing is, people who do this don't know why they get enraged. They don't know what's wrong with them. They don't know anything much, because so many times we have, in the whole field of psychology, which was founded following like a lot of medical understanding of things, there's cause and effect. If you twist your arm, your elbow might hurt, right? So it would be like, well, if he's angry at you, then what did you do? It's 50-50. There's a cause and effect. But you didn't do anything. And so for a long time, people have been really confused when they try to understand what's happening, because they've been told that they're part of it. But actually, in a way, they're not. They're just the object that's been assaulted. Same thing with hate groups and so forth in the world today. They are looking for someone to blame for whatever's not working in their life, and they always look for someone who's different, who can stand out. And there's another important thing about this, and that is that people who cannot connect to other people through empathy, that's the normal way we connect, with sort of an understanding on the other person, you know, an empathy, a feeling of just recognizing the other person as another human being here on planet Earth. And they don't connect with empathy to people. So they would connect with a partner or others in their realm through a projection. So if they connect to their partner through a projection and they're still feeling not really connected to other people, they might want to connect by bonding with other people against someone. that can be a primary motive for bonding together to form these hate groups. Somebody says, well, I could hate those people too. I'll join that group. And then they feel that they're connected somehow, even though they're connected through hate instead of love, you know, through just destruction instead of love. It doesn't matter. We have a need to feel we're part of the people around us, you know. We're part of the world. We're part of humanity. But if they don't, they can very easily join groups to feel connected, to bond against someone. And that's how they target people. It's just like a lack of consciousness. So verbal abuse attempts to cast a spell over consciousness. People just don't have awareness. And verbal abuse avidly pursues the destruction of consciousness because it's always a lie told to you or about you. It's always saying you're this or you want this or you think this or those people think this or those people want to do this to you or you're doing that. You know, it's all a lie. And people who tell somebody what they want, like you want to argue, they don't feel crazy. If they think about it, then they find out, you know, I can't know what she wants unless I ask her. So I've told people who get told, you want to argue, you don't care. I've said, you can say, you aren't me and you aren't God, so you don't know what I want or how I feel or whatever was just said. When you think of it, people who consider themselves rational, really rational people, they consider themselves logical and rational, will say, there's 400 samples in the appendix of another book, you know, the Can He Change book. And they're all irrational because they're all telling somebody what they want, think, feel, need, know, don't know, should do, as if they were that other person.
And that was another question that I had, like, what is the person's response? What should the person respond when being verbally attacked?
Just say, hey, you're not me and you're not God, so you don't know what I want. You don't know what I think, and walk away. And if you're being interrogated, because that can happen, you know, it's interrogation is like one question after the other, and you're still trying to answer the first one. Like, where were you? Why'd you go there? What were you doing? What'd you buy? And you're still trying to answer, see, I went to this store, and I went to that store. Trying to answer the first, hearing the next. Or it could be, who were you talking to? Was it a guy or something, you know? But whatever, when you're facing a moment when you realize you're still trying to answer this question and keep track of the next one, just say this. Please write down your questions and I'll get back to you later. I gotta go. And walk out. Whatever you're doing. Just don't try to answer the interrogation because it's horrible and you don't have to. Nobody has the right to interrogate you.
Part of my understanding is that, like with interrogation and all of the ways in which you were saying that people verbally abuse others, is that it's really to create a sense of psychological dominance. Is that your sense, that it's a mm-hmm. way of establishing like a false sense of superiority?
Yeah, I believe that fits into the motivations that being dominant and in control, because, you know, they may have an underlying fear of not being in charge or not being in control or not being important enough. There are a lot of factors that can motivate a person to want to dominate another person and to have control, to be a more important, to, you know, just be the one.
And when many people think of violence, usually they think of physical violence. And mm-hmm. and if they were to think of verbal abuse, it seems like it would be minimized as less impactful than physical violence. Do you consider verbal abuse to be more, less, or equal to physical violence?
I'd say more. I've heard from so many women. Like, a woman called me. She was on her cell phone. She was getting driven home from the hospital. She said, I'm just calling you because I was in the hospital. My jaw was broken in a physical violent thing in my relationship. But I want you to know the verbal abuse was worse. And I said, I know, it is. Yeah, it is. Many, many people tell me that. And she went on to say, you can heal from a bruise, but you can't heal from those things that get planted in your mind. And she also had an abusive mother, so she, definitely would need a lot of trauma therapy, which I recommended to her to get trauma therapy. And abusers need their own kind of trauma therapy too, to get into touch with when they lost themselves in childhood. It's really a huge thing in the world today, this control, dominance, verbal abuse. It's a huge thing. And now it's gotten into the cyberspace, we might say, and social media, and people will make comments and make up lies. So we've got to be very aware of what's real and what's not, what's true and what's not.
You say that this person is disconnected from themselves is partly why they're acting out in such a way.
Yeah, there is a real disconnect from the true self. Yeah, and they don't feel crazy too, or irrational. It's insane. It's insane. Verbal abuse is not only a lie told to you about you, it's also, kind of insane to say these things, You can't tell the people what they think and want and feel. There's just no way you can do that because you don't know. You haven't asked, So it's
a form of playing God.
Yeah, it's a form of playing God. Verbal abuse is not about a fight, not about a conflict. It's about control. That's one of my bottom lines. And it precedes domestic violence. It's the unseen face of domestic violence.
And what about bystanders? Because oftentimes, if there was someone being assaulted in front of you, if there was a man attempting to assault a woman, you might step in or try to help. But when it comes to verbal abuse, people may not think that's a big deal or know what to do. What would you suggest for bystanders who are witnessing someone being verbally abused?
Yeah, this is the greatest question that you just asked. Yeah, it's so important because if a woman goes through a part of her life, nobody usually sees it. He doesn't do this to her when the neighbors are over. But and then people see this somewhere and don't act, don't say anything, then it's like she feels crazier. Nobody sees it. Everybody thinks she's got with the most wonderful boyfriend or whatever on earth and all that. So when no one sees it. Now, a woman told me that she'd gone along just being countered on everything and certain, you're too sensitive and certain verbally abusive comments. So, but nobody had ever seen it. She just had trouble getting a grip on what is going on here. And then she was at a restaurant and some gentlemen were at the next table, a lot of little tables around. And her husband, it was, she said, he started yelling at her, sort of like, one of these kind of prove you right arguments, I'll prove you wrong, and this is what I'm doing, this is what, just sort of yelling, raising his voice. And the gentleman at the next table turned towards her. They said, you don't have to go home with him. In other words, this guy is bad news. And that was the first time in her life anybody ever noticed the way he was. And of course, she went home because she was married and they lived together. But she knew what was going on. And so I think that that's a life-saving kind of thing you can do, is you can say something like, does he always talk to you that way? Or what's he talking to you? What are you talking to her like that for? Some kind of a comment is so important because it's like she's living in this world with E.T. or some extraterrestrial, and nobody in the world sees it. So she begins to think she's crazy. But then suddenly somebody sees it, and it's such a validation to her life that it's wonderfully valuable for bystanders to say something, something that will make him realize that he's really, really over the line, really gone too far.
We now have an administration where we are getting this all of the time. The president tweets lies about people and constantly is overt in terms of defining other people. And I think the way that he seems to cushion himself from reality, for lack of a better word, is kind of just to stay tuned to Fox News and to call anyone else who's trying to call him out on fact checking or that this is a lie to to define them.
Exactly.
So now they're fake news and they're, you know, what is going on beneath the surface of the attacks that we see from the president of the United States?
Yeah, it's horrific. It's bordering sociopathic behavior, I think. It's definitely, I think he captured the minds of people who were struggling, maybe economically or whatever, as to he was going to make everything wonderful and great for them. And so everybody believed him keeps believing him, sort of like a cult leader, you know. They take over their minds, and that's what he's done.
And you have some examples of the mind or the cult of personality, maybe, also in your book, Controlling People. Can you talk about that?
A cult is basically a person can find it very comfortable to let someone make some decisions for them, you know, especially if they admire them and they're older, more mature, more educated, or anything that they can trust and all. But they can get hooked into following this person and believing them. In a cult, a cult leader will take away all their privacy, will check on every little thing they're doing, just kind of take control and isolate them also from the outside world. And people who just watch one news channel, like Fox, and just listen to their president can be brainwashed and completely out of touch with reality, just completely out of touch with what's really going on. So it's very, it's kind of dangerous, you know. That's why I was saying in that little thing I read, verbal abuse can hide out in relationships, family, schools, cultures, and cyberspace. It can bring tyrants to power and destroy relationships.
Well, Patricia Evans, thank you so much for speaking with me today.
Oh, thank you very much. It was a pleasure to talk with you, and really glad I had an opportunity to present this. Thank you so much.
That was Patricia Evans, author of The Verbally Abusive Relationship and Controlling People, talking about what verbal abuse is, its impacts, and what could be done to resist and combat it.